Well, hi, folks, and welcome back to Naturally Adventurous. As always, this is Ken, and I'm with Charlie Hess. As always, we'll say a big thanks to our patrons on Patreon. We really appreciate their support. And if you're not yet a Patreon and want to become one, check out the info in our show description. This week, we welcome back Andres Vasquez. Andres is a guide for tropical birding. He's an Ecuadorian. He lives in Quito. He's written several books about Ecuadorian birds and wildlife. He's our collaborator. Charlie's and my collaborator on the School of Birding, where we offer a bunch of cool tutorials online. And he's an all-around good guy, a good friend of Charlie's and mine going back many years. So, Andres, welcome back to the program.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me. I guess the ratings didn't fall too much, so I'm back here. That's great.
Pleasure to have you back. What we're going to talk about this week is, it's a little bit more fun than last week. You know, talking about a global pandemic is a bit heavy.
Lighthearted.
It's interesting. It's fascinating. It's kind of horrifying, and it's a bit heavy. So we're going to get back to sort of nature, travel, and birding this week. We're going to focus on Ecuador, since that's your home turf. And we're going to, so Andres is going to talk about three of his most memorable lifetime bird sightings in Ecuador. And considering you've spent your whole lifetime birding there, these must be some pretty amazing stories and experiences. And then Charlie and I might pitch in with a couple little stories of our own from Ecuador. But that's the focus for this week, is Andres's coolest experiences. So we'll just kick it off with the first one that you mentioned to us before the episode, which is nocturnal curassow. It's a bird I've never seen, so I'm prepared to be gripped.
Yeah, me neither.
Oh, then it's going to be much nicer to tell it.
Inspiration.
Exactly. There you go. I mean, stories, kind of funny stories about birds, not necessarily extremely great experiences, but things that have kept on my mind because of the situations particularly. And the thing with the nocturnal curassow is a funny one, because just as you said, well, it's a very, very tough bird to see. Big as a turkey, but solitary. So it's not like you having North America, a bunch of turkeys that just roam around in your backyards in some states. This one here is a very, very reclusive, shy, difficult bird, beautiful, but inside the deep, deep, dark Amazon. And is a bird that feeds by day, but for some weird reason, it sings only at night from the top of trees, right? So when it is roosting in the middle of the night, that's the only time it sings. That's why it's called the nocturnal curassow, even though it's not necessarily a nocturnal feeder. So it's a very interesting bird. And it's also beautiful. I don't know if you must be, of course, aware of the beauty of the bird, right?
It's a weird looking bird.
Yeah, it's sort of brown colored, eh? It's very different looking from other curassows.
Yeah, it has these yellowy eyebrows. No, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. But it is tough. And so we were doing this trip with a great friend of mine, Rick Goldfarb. He has been with me in like 13 tours now.
Wow.
Only here in Ecuador he's done 8, I think. Six to eight, I cannot remember now.
Wow.
But this one was one of the cleanup tours. Trying to clean up is impossible in Ecuador. I mean, over 1,600 species. So we had to put this itinerary trying to focus on a specific target. And one of those was the nocturnal curassow. And for that one, we go to this lodge called Shiripuno, which is a nice lodge, but it is very remote. You have to fly to the city of Coca. You have to then drive for 2 hours in a car. And then 3 to 5 hours, depending on the conditions of the river, on a boat. And it is the closest to a four-wheel drive boat ride I have ever been to. because it's this river that it is fairly narrow and fairly wide at the same time, but it has many times a trunk in the middle of the river or a fallen tree, and you have to drive down go down in this motor canoe with a chainsaw just in case you need to cut through so that you can go through. And sometimes if the log is there kind of floating there, the driver will say, yeah, I think I can make it, so hold on to your hats, and speeds up and hits the hits the log in the water, and you go through over. So it's a very interesting experience. And then the lodge is basic, is wooden, cold water that comes from the river for the showers, even though the logistics are safe because it is run by a nice friend, Harold Vaca.
Yeah, he used to guide all over Ecuador, I guess, but he...
I remember meeting up with him
a few times, yeah. He always guides with a bandana on, right?
Yep, you know him. And he always scratches his chin, yeah.
Yeah, a little goatee and a cool guy.
Exactly. Now, he is a big part of this story because I'm glad that you know him. He has this personality it is always being super tranquil to the point that you think that he's on dope all the time. But he's just really tranquil. Like there's no way you can
chill out.
Yeah, super chill. That in a way that's absolutely great. If you are a stressed birder that wants to go after the birds, you'd probably want to have somebody that shows like, we're going for it and we're stressed about it. But this guy's like, yeah, we is there. We'll probably get it. Like, no, we want to get it. Yeah. So we are having dinner, actually, and this guy, in front of my client, he's just chilled there, eating his soup, and a big moth or a bug or something just sits on his forehead. And my client goes like, oh, you have a bug in your forehead. What bug? He says. So it's, and then it flies off. He doesn't even notice the bug. So you see how chill this guy is, and he's a very interesting personality. He's a superb guy. I love him, and super knowledgeable, and he knows his thing. But if you don't know him, you are a little bit uncertain if he's gonna deliver. That's how I can say it, right?
Right.
But he's superb. He's really, really sharp, really good. So we are already four nights in his lodge, and we still have not seen the curacao. And we have heard it, but it's always been away and far. The last night of the tour, this is 7 p.m. We're eating dinner. Bird doesn't sing. We talk with the clients. We do the list. And we said, well, what can we say? Let's just go to bed. I am working on my bag, and this is all on candles because there is no electricity. So it takes a while working on my bag, leaving the next day. Already stressed of having missed that bird. By 9, the damn bird starts singing. Fairly close, right? You hear him like, moom, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a weird, deep, deep sound. And I said, well, damn, it's fairly close. And my feet starts itching, like, ah, I need to go get it. It was still a lifer for me.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, ah, crap. And I said, look, I'll stay here. If it sings again, I'm going out and I look for Harold so that we can go get it. As I am thinking this, Harold knocks on my door. Hey, Andres, the curacao is singing. It's not too far. Shall we go? Shall we go? Damn sure we should go. Let's go. And I said, look, shall we go just the two of us or with clients? You see, I think that we should try to probably locate it ourselves. Let's just go ourselves, and then if we get it, we go for them. We'll, okay, let's do it. And so we go, and I am just rushing out. I just take my binoculars with me. I forget everything, and I just trust 100% on Harold. And the way to get this bird is it sings constantly for, 20 minutes. So basically, you have 20 minutes to rush close to where you see the bird. Or where the bird is singing, and try to find it. And in the Amazon, it means that if it is close to a normal trail, that's great. And if not, you have to bushwhack off trail and try to get to the bird. But this is pretty concerning in the Amazon, where you can easily, in the daytime, get lost easily.
Yeah.
By night, it was a big concern to me. About 5 minutes after we went off trail, then I just realized, damn it, we can get lost easily here. Harold,
yeah,
you are aware of their position. We're not getting lost, right? Don't worry. We're good. Like, Harold, sure. Like, yeah. And so we are every time farther and farther from the trail, going bushwagging, just following the track of the bird. And then the bird is still singing, so we're rushing there, just running. And finally get to the spot. After scanning for it in the tops of the trees, we manage to find the bird. And that's also very lucky, because many times they are singing from the top of the tree, but there is a lot of layers of other shorter trees, and you can still not see the bird even though you are directly underneath it. And this time it was gorgeous, so right there. And I am watching the bird with a feeling of fear that we're going to get lost, and with a feeling of joy that I saw finally this amazing lifer, right?
Yeah.
So then I just realized I didn't bring any GPS. I didn't bring any other thing but my flashlight and my binoculars. I don't know how we're going to show this to other clients. And so we start moving back, and I said, Harold, can you come back to the same spot once again with the clients? Are you sure that we're going to be able to do that? Because the bird is stopped singing. We cannot follow the singing of the bird anymore. We have to blindly, sort of, come back to the very same spot. Are you sure we're going to make it? We can try. Like, what? No, we can try. Can we actually make it? Are you sure? Are you 100% sure we can? Yeah, don't worry. Like, god damn. I am worried, Harold. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. Okay, so we go back to the camp, and I am there. It's like, okay, just before knocking on their doors, are you 100% we're going to make it, Harold? Well, not 100%, but it's always like that. That's life. Like, no, Harold, you don't say that. You give me confidence. Like,
I want to be reassured. Knock.
Exactly. No, but it is a funny thing. And so I said, okay, I'm knocking on the door of my client, Rick, and doesn't answer. I said, I'll knock a little harder. Tuk, 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 tuk. He doesn't answer. And I said, Harold, probably not. And once more. Tuk, 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 harder. And he answers like, oh, sorry, Andres, my alarm didn't go off. What time is it? It's like, no, Rick, is it still night? The thing is that we want to tell you that we found the nocturnal curassow, and we can try to get it for you. So are you in for it? It's like, yeah, no, I'll be out in a minute. Just give me a minute. And so while he gets dressed and everything, this was also with his son. It was great fun also, Andrew. And so while they are getting dressed, I talked to them through the door and I said, look, but these are the conditions. I am not sure 100% that we're going to be able to make it there because it is off trail. We need to find our way. And I'm going to bring my GPS this time so that we just don't get lost. So we are not getting lost anyways, but we are probably not going to find the bird. So we are waking up and we're doing this. We'll probably come back in an hour. It's going to be close to 11 p.m. or something like that. Are you in for this? Like, yeah, no, we're in. Let's go. I don't know how Harold did this. We went through the main trail. We didn't even find the turn off on the track that we did initially. Harold just said, no, through here. But Harold, this is not the way. Like, no, I know what I'm doing. I don't know how Shortcut. In the world he managed to find the exact spot of where the bird was. And everybody got great views. And then I said, nice. Well, just out of the blue, what happens if I play the tape here? And so I played the tape, and the bird starts going nuts and responding and singing. And so it was a superb view. It was a very, very nice experience. And seeing the beautiful bird, seeing it sing in the middle of the night, having accomplished something that was risky and kind of with the fear of getting lost in the Amazon. It was a superb sight in that one. Yeah,
that's, I can imagine.
Very jealous.
Yeah, me too. For people who don't know, curassows, like Andre said, they're sort of turkey-sized, variable, but the biggest ones are sort of turkey-sized. They're big. They're incredibly secretive. They're all quite... I think they were probably originally common, but any place where there's been hunting, they just like disappear immediately. And so all curacaos are like hard to see, and nocturnal is like the hardest of the lot. It's just like this near legendary bird of the Amazon.
Yeah. Now there are some curacaos in Central America that are much easier because in many, many places there is just no hunting or anything, and then they are quite easy to see, and they are confiding in that. Same in the Pantanal in Brazil. But these ones in the Amazon, you are talking about indigenous groups that are still hunt until nowadays for, you know, living, not for selling or anything like that,
Low
but
pipes.
They just normally, do that. So birds like curacaos tend to be very shy, especially these ones,
It's one of the biggest things that you can hunt in the Amazon readily. Mm-hmm. I'll briefly tell you, Andres, about the first time I went to the Amazon in Ecuador. This was more than 15 years ago. So as Charlie and I have often talked about, it was a different era in terms of like information about where birds are. You know, we often relied on these like hand-drawn maps and trip reports we'd printed out in the States and brought with us and that sort of thing. But my buddy Pete and I had heard about this research station run by the Catholic University in Quito. And it was just this incredible deal where for like $25 a night, you could stay in this beautiful tract of forest in the proper Amazon and see all these birds. Most places where you get into the Amazon, you're staying at a lodge that ranges from like moderately expensive to very expensive. And for me in those days, you know, even something moderately expensive was like unthinkable. Like no way I was dropping $100 a night on a lodge. Like never going to happen. So, but I'm looking at the guide and there's just this whole, like hundreds of awesome birds in the Amazon. And I'm just, you know, so Pete and I were dreaming about seeing these birds. And so we heard about this research station and we did some detective work and we found out where the office was in Quito. You know, there was no way to like email or anything. So we actually went to the office and chatted with them and it sounded really promising. They were like, you can come, we have space and it costs this much and blah, blah, you know, this is how you get there. But then just at the end, they said, but you need to have a yellow fever vaccination card, which I did not have. And so my buddy had one and he was like, all right, cool. So we're leaving in 3 days. I didn't have one. And so the plan was I get vaccinated in Quito and he went off birding and left me behind. So I'm stuck in Quito, staying in some kind of like $2 hotel. And, you know, I'm on this desperate mission to get a yellow fever vaccination because basically if I can't get this, there's like 200 to 300 Amazonian birds that I'm not going to be able to see. So I had a strong sense of urgency. I poked around, found out about a sort of a free, I guess, a government clinic where they gave out free yellow fever vaccinations like once a week. And sort of looked at the schedule and it was like, okay, tomorrow, they're doing it tomorrow. Awesome. Sort of 9 a.m. Sweet. Like this is all going to work out. This is great. So, you know, woke up, probably walked, probably was too cheap to take a taxi, got to the hospital. And, you know, I walked up to like the door of the public clinic where they administered these yellow fever vaccines and my heart sunk because there was like 200, maybe 250 people lined up. I mean, it was just like a mob scene. You know, people are like lying on the ground and leaning against the wall. I mean, there's just this sea of humanity there. You know, I naively thought, I just show up at 9 and I get my vaccination and off I go. It's like, oh no. And then I realized there's a system and the system is numbers. So they only give 50 yellow fever vaccinations. And of course, by the time I got there, the numbers had been gone for hours. And I was like, oh my God, my dreams of the Amazon are going down the drain. And then
no,
I realized, okay, exactly. I knew what I had to do. Like I was going to see if somebody would sell me their number because, you know, they live in Quito. People can probably come back later. Whereas for me, this is like life and death.
This is urgency. Yeah,
exactly. And so, I mean, I stood up in the hall and I kind of raised my arms and then I addressed the whole like 200 plus people in Spanish. No. And I was just like, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, like I urgently need a yellow fever vaccination and I'm willing to pay if someone can give me their number. And I just never forget the way they looked at me. They're like, this? What is this gringo? There was actually just a lot of pity and what they just found it very puzzling. Like, what was I doing there? What did I need this vaccination for? And this young woman very kindly just walked up to me and just handed me her number. And I was like, yeah, how much do you want for it? She's like, no, it's okay. I'm actually here for something else. I didn't even need the number. I'll just give it to you. Like, it was really, really friendly. Right. And so I got my yellow fever vaccination, and I've still got this like dodgy little card, like this little like handwritten thing. Got down to the Amazon, and again, we were too cheap to take a plane. Like, most people fly down to, what is it, Coca?
Coca, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then they go down the river, but we took buses all the way down the East Slope, and it's this crazy, like, hair-raising bus drive. You know, it's got to be, those roads on the East Slope of the Andes are just insanely steep. There's landslides everywhere. Yeah. There's, you know, like, bulldozers stationed every few miles just to, like, move the landslides away. And so it was just this crazy. I remember, you know, you stop at the Huacamaya Ridge and there's like a little virgin statue there, and the bus driver stopped and he like said a prayer, and then down the slope we went. And so just getting to Coca was this crazy journey. Coca is this like dodgy town. I mean, it's like real frontier town. And then from Coca we had to like take another like little bus. It was like a company bus from an oil company, I think, and that took us down to this research station. So, I mean, getting to this place was an incredible journey. When we got there, it was just paradise. You know, we're in an amazing Amazonian forest. It was my first time in the Amazon, and I'd never seen any of the birds there. So I can't even narrow it down to like a couple species. It was just this deluge of new birds, and just birding like dawn to dusk every day. It was fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's coincidentally the first place in the Amazon that I have also been, like deep Amazon as well, the very same research station. I know the place is superb, yeah.
La Católica. I always wanted to go there.
Yeah, thoroughly recommended.
For sure.
So yeah, I need to spend more time in the Amazon. It's just so unbelievably rich. It's the richest forest in the world, certainly in terms of birds. Nothing even comes close.
Not only that, I mean, I used to live as a bird guide and naturalist guide in the Amazon, in those lodges like in the Napo River for 2 years, birded quite heavily there. And I've gone back to the Amazon several times subsequently to bird and do bird tours and everything. And the sole place in continental Ecuador that I can still get lifers more than any other place is still the Amazon, compared to like the Andes or the coast.
Really?
Like, in order for me to get a lifer in Ecuador, I would go back to the Amazon. So that tells you.
I had a friend who spent, I think he spent 8 months at a research station in the Amazon in Peru. So he's basically on foot every day. That you know, you're not driving around, you're not taking boats, you're walking around on some kind of doing transects or something, surveys. And on the last day of his 8 months there, he saw a new bird. Like, that's just typical of the Amazon. It's just it's so amazing, high diversity, and there's so many low density birds.
Things that you have amazing. Seen once in 2 years being there. That's just what it is. You see that bird two or three times in a week, and then you don't see it for two more years.
Well, let's move on to Andres's number two sort of top lifetime bird experience from Ecuador, which is another one that's going to grip me, and I suspect Charlie as well. And this is buff-fronted owl.
Yeah, the buff-fronted owl. So, yeah, this is a beautiful bird, one of my favorite birds in the world. Belongs to this genus of owls that it is only a few species, like three, four, five, I cannot remember, Aegolius genus. And quite a small, but really, really beautiful. It's one of those things that when you open the book for the first time, you see a picture and you said, oh, I want to see this one. Right? And same for some weird reason, I used a photo of that one from a painting that I bought in Brazil as my Facebook profile picture. I don't know if you've noticed that one, but it's that face of that owl.
Yeah.
And it's been there for years and years and years, and I still had not seen it. It was a lifer until a couple years back when this happened. So, the thing with this owl is that, as you two guys are well aware, is rare, is difficult even when you are in the correct environment, and is unpredictable. It's quite unpredictable. A person can see it one day and then the next one it doesn't sing in the very same spot. Now it's a weird bird. And so I have had several experiences regarding that one, like going alone with to try to find it in this spot close to Quito, going with my wife camping in this other spot trying to find it. And whenever we went camping in this spot, we didn't realize that there was a school of kids that they were singing and guitaring just that very same night. A lot of frustrations like that, and there's a bunch of stories behind the sighting. So we are, for instance, once with these clients that come here to bird for one morning in around Quito, just before flying to the south of Ecuador to the Lodge of Jorupe. So we arrive into Quito and we bird this forest that is the dry forest, and that is exactly the same place that I went camping with my wife a couple of years back to try to find the owl and didn't get it, of course. But we're birding in the, it's called Jerusalem, the forest. And we're birding there.
I know it well.
Yeah. I bet you have tried for the owl there.
Yeah, I've.
So we're birding there, and that's all cool. We take the flight to the south of Ecuador that afternoon, and when we are there at the airport just after our morning birding, of course we are bird watchers there, and we are very obvious bird watchers. I mean, they can point out, oh, these people are birders from a long distance, right? And so this guy in the waiting room inside the airport approaches, and you can tell that he's another bird watcher. He's like, hey guys, how are you? Did you hear the news? Like, what news? We were birding yesterday night in Jerusalem and we got the buff-fronted owl. I just wanted to tell you that. And he leaves. So just out of the blue, this guy comes with those news. Just, I don't know if to just wind us up or I don't know. And I'm hearing this and I'm like, okay, cool. That's great. Great to know.
Happy for you.
That, exactly. We fly that afternoon to the south of Ecuador and drive to this lodge called Jorupe that is also dry forest. And when we get there to Jorupe, upon arrival, on check-in, I always talk to the local birder there. There's this ranger that knows about the birds and everything. And just as we arrive and put in the bags out, I say, well, any big news about birds or anything like that? He's like, yeah, you see, yesterday we forgot the lights on the restaurant, and this weird owl that we haven't seen before came into the restaurant. And we didn't realize, but then today, like at 10 a.m. when I went cleaning the restaurant for your arrival, this owl was sitting on the chairs, but we don't know what it is. And he shows me the pictures on his phone that he takes with his phone, and they are full-frame pictures of the buff-fronted owl.
No way.
This is the very same day.
Is that... I didn't think it was in that sort of habitat. I thought it was more of a montane forest bird.
It is. That's why it's so unpredictable, because it's all over South America, but nowhere in South America anyways. It's weird.
Maybe
so
poorly understood
the preference of habitat,
what its habitat really
yeah.
is.
Yeah, but this is dry forest. It is also there. It's kind of a weird thing. So this is 4 p.m. It's still a lot of light. And he says, yeah, no, we had it there, and the bird was there. We were just leaving the doors open, see if it leaves, but he didn't. So half an hour ago, he says, I released him. I just put it, like, are you serious? Why didn't you just wait for us? Half hour, come on. And my reaction was like, if the bird is still around, I need to call it. Sometimes the birds call in the middle of the day. So I start playing for the owl. Of course, it didn't respond.
Yeah.
I mean, lost owl. We tried every night since and didn't get anything. It was a weird experience on that owl there. Afterwards, we have tried going out with Sam to a couple of places trying for it, and nothing. Until one day we heard a hot tip from another great birder from the country who doesn't live in the country anymore, Roger Allman. And he gave us good gen about where to find the owl in a place that is about 3 hours from Quito. And so we said, okay, Sam, this is it. Sam says, well, this is the bird that I want the most in the world right now. So I am in.
Yep.
Jose, are you in? yeah, I have this tour that is just a day tour. So if I manage to cut it short, I can join you guys.
If they were tired out or something.
So at the end, Jose couldn't join. And so, well, we went to this place. It's called Tumbaviro. Made reservations in this hotel. And we made a reservation in that particular hotel because apparently the owl sometimes is just around the grounds of the hotel. So we had other backup spots as well. And one main spot that we needed to check. So we go there. And of course, we go to the hotel and talk to the guy that opens the door because we're right quite late. Hey, have you heard about the owl around here? It's like, yeah, yeah. Yesterday it was singing right here. We're like, great. Of course, when we were there, the owl didn't sing right there. Didn't show up, didn't do anything. And we just only had the one night because for these circumstances, it was like the only night that we could. But the next day was my wife's birthday, so I couldn't put two nights. So all a weird thing. Well, it was only that night that we had the chance to go for the owl. I had also like a cold. I had a fever and a cold, and we had just to go, and we went with Sam. And you know how Sam is, that he, especially about owling, he just doesn't let go. We're there trying in a ton of places, just playing, and trying here and there and there. It was close to midnight, I think. And we decided to go to bed empty-handed because I was just feeling chills and I need to take a pill and I was just bad. So we said, look, what's the plan for tomorrow? What time you want to wake up? Sam says, how about 3? Come on, Sam. Are you serious? No. Sam, look, I'm sick. I cannot. I'll probably wake up like 4:30. You can go at the 3 and just play around here, the grounds, and just walk down the street. Okay, I'll do that on my own. And I set the alarm for like 4:30 or something like that. And when I set the alarm, I wake up to just go, and Sam is still in bed. Come on, Sam, let's go. And so we went, and we tried for this owl once more around the hotel grounds. Nothing. And so we just needed to decide where to go for it once more because it was going to be close to dawn and we just had very little time. So we had only the one spot in which we put all our efforts and hopes. And we went to that particular spot, the very, very same spot we had been playing like nuts the previous night. We didn't get any response until suddenly we hear a rooster already. And I said, okay, this is it.
That's it.
Sam goes one way, I go the other way. We each start playing our own thing. When, boom, at the same time, we hear the bird fairly close in the middle of us. We were 100 meters away. And so he goes back to me and I go back to him. Did you hear it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Did you hear it? Yeah. We're super excited. I mean, goosebumps on the arms and everything. And where is it? Where is it? Where is it? And we're panicking because it is getting light. The bird may not respond. This is our final chance. The bird sings fairly close. We are desperately trying to find it. And I go from one angle. Sam goes from this other angle. I managed to get a good spot and boom, I got the bird. Sam, I got the bird. Sam comes running, he trips, he falls. He's coming towards my spot. I managed to put him, look, there it is, there it is. Like, I don't see it. The typical answer that you don't expect from your clients when you have it right there. It's like, I don't see it. And you're desperate. And Sam finally locks on it and sees it well. It's like, I got it. And then, okay, let's try to get a photo. So I'm holding the flashlight so that he gets a photo. The bird flies, of course, didn't get a picture. Okay, let's go get this one in this particular spot. Let's backtrack and try to call it to this tree. And then the roosters start calling more and more often in some other dawn chorus type of things. And the bird comes in for a couple seconds into this branch right in front of us. Beautiful. And I spotted it. Sam, shoot. And you don't want to hear Sam saying, box, box. And he doesn't shoot, doesn't go off. Bird flies away. Simon's box. No, come on. And again and again. Bert happily lands once more in an open spot. Sam gets one photo and boom, disappears. Light goes on. And that was it. And so it was a lot of reward. It's like, yeah, high-fiving. And it was like the best bird sighting, really, after all the grief that for years and years and years this bird has given us both and me personally. Finally managed to get my Facebook profile picture bird. As it was a funny thing. So we go back to the lodge to have breakfast and then to pack. And so I'm helping Sam packing a little bit, and I took his backpack and I hear this crystal sound in his backpack. It's like, what's this, Sam? And he has brought this champagne, very expensive champagne bottle to celebrate, because the plan was that Jose, Sam and I would got it early in the night the day before, and we would celebrate with champagne and everything. But it was already 8 a.m. after a bowl of cereal, so we didn't feel like champagne, and we had to return with the champagne that was just rattling in the back of the car. It was a funny thing. This day mile is a tough one.
Yeah, for people, well, our friend Sam Woods, people who are not birders and listen, they probably think all birders are just obsessional. And that there's some truth to that. Sam is like next level obsessional, and
next level.
He's more focused on owls than anything else in the world. So I can just imagine how happy Sam was to see this owl. Yeah, and the tension until he got it.
No, it was a tremendous experience, really. Very, very intense. As I said, goosebumps when we first heard it, and panicking. Sam tripping and rushing, and no, it was a superb experience. It was very, very funny. In retrospective, at the time, it was stressful.
A few weeks after you saw that bird, I was guiding a tour in Ecuador. I came all the way from, it might have been South Africa, or I can't remember if I was in Thailand by then. But I came back in, and I only found out that you'd seen this bird. I obviously didn't pay enough attention to Facebook or whatever, but I only found out after I arrived, and they were like, we could take you up there to see it, but you know, I didn't have enough time to go up there. I came maybe the day before the tour and left the day after the tour. I was just so frustrated that I had the chance, I had this offer to take me up there, but I just didn't have the time to go up. So that the next time I come to Ecuador, I'm going to be going up to that hotel and looking for this bird.
Yeah, no, for sure, Sam and I will be up for it.
Yeah. Anyway, fantastic story. I'm going to have a little interlude here and give you one of my little memorable bird sightings from Ecuador. So there's some tremendously difficult birds in Ecuador. I mean, you can work there for decades and still have nemeses that you still haven't found, you know.
Yep, I still have them.
I bet you do. I don't know if you've seen this bird that I'm going to talk about now. It's called the chestnut-bellied cotinga. Have you seen that bird?
Trash bird, yeah.
I've seen it.
Trash bird.
Not gripped.
No, it took me years and years to see it for sure. It's a great bird.
Yeah. I know a lot of the top guides, they were still missing it. You know, they work full time in Ecuador for 10 years, whatever, and still miss this bird. But
yeah,
I was missing it, and I made a real effort to go and see it. And there was a place called Cerro Mongus.
Oh, I Cerro hate the place.
Yeah, everyone hates it. It's like a Cerro is like a peak or a little mountain.
Yeah, hill.
And,
yeah.
I don't know. And I guess what is mongoose or what?
No. Just a weird. That. It's not even called like just that by locals. Name. It's I don't know
people
where
people call it Mondragon, right?
Exactly. Yeah, people call it Mondragon, but the birders for some reason, early birders decades ago started calling it Cerro Mongoose. I don't know why.
They probably just misheard the Spanish, and I think you said Cerro Mongoose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, for sure. You see, that's the case of I just learned that the case of alligator is because they were hearing Spanish people saying el lagarto. That's where the word alligator apparently comes from.
That's amazing.
Huh.
Yeah.
So I got some gen on this Cerro Mongoose, like. So I think somebody had been up there and they put a GPS point or some directions about how to get up there. And it was supposed to be a real killer hike. And first you had to get to this town called Impueran, this little village from where there was a really steep trail that went up and up and up. So normally people would go up there in a 4x4 along really bad roads to get this little village. I didn't have a 4x4 and I'm incredibly cheap as well. So I was going to try and get to this place on public transport. So I took my tent up there. I thought I'm going to hike up all the way with my tent and then I'm going to spend the next morning looking for this thing. So I caught a bus from Quito and I got off at the junction where the road started going up. And from that junction up to the little village, I think it was about 20 kilometers.
Yeah, no, it's a long distance. Thinking, yeah. And it's up steep.
Anyway, and I was thinking, yeah, I'm going to start walking and I'm going to try and hitchhike. And, you know, I would walk, you know, I went 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers, and I keep looking over my shoulder for this car to take me up there. And it never came. And I had to hike up just to this village. I had to hike up 20 kilometers to the start of this killer trail.
Exactly.
And don't forget, I'm taking up my tent and all my food and my water and everything. You know, I was probably carrying 20 kilos hiking up a steep road like 20 kilometers. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah,
I was
should have carried 20 hard-boiled eggs.
Yeah, exactly. So I got to this little village and I'm finished already and I find the little trail and it's getting to, you know, it's maybe sort of mid-afternoon. I've been walking all day in the heat of the day, absolutely exhausted. And I guess I was pretty fit in those days. And I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and I went up this really steep, I think probably very muddy trail. And by the time it got dark, I'd sort of got somewhere near the top and I just pitched my tent and just collapsed inside. Just absolutely. I mean, I think to this day, it's still probably one of the toughest things I've done. Because also, you know, to get up there, it's like you're at an elevation of over 3,000 meters, you know.
Yeah, more,
and,
yeah.
You know, really, thin air and just really, really, really tough. Anyway, I got up there and there was another little trail that went along and I think there was like a little aqueduct or something like that that went along and you had to walk along here and then there was a landslide and I heard that you had to sort of scan around the landslide at the bottom of the landslide and this bird sometimes comes up in the early morning to sun itself and a lot of the time up there it's quite misty and rainy and you can get there and it'll just be just thick mist like all morning and you just don't see anything but I was really lucky with the weather and it was blue skies and I just sat there in this spot that I'd been told about and I just waited, just scanning. And then I see this thing just pop up on cue. It just sat up on top of it. And I think I scrambled down this landslide a little bit to get closer and I got pretty good views of this bird. And I was so happy. It was just like, oh my God, you know. I mean, people have been up there, you know, many times and still not seen it. So just the fact that you've gone up there doesn't mean that you're going to see it. And then I had a little walk around the Paramo there is very beautiful. The sort of thick, moist grassland. I think they have these Frailejón.
Frailejones, yeah.
Espaletia, I think they're called, these kind of like velvety leaf plants. It's a really scenic place, really beautiful. I think I even flushed a big Andean snipe there, which was the only time I ever saw it in Ecuador. And that's another bird. One of the top guides for Ecuador, really, Nick Athanas. At this point, he hadn't seen this Cotinga, and he also hadn't seen the Andean snipe. And I managed to get both on this. I got down there, and of course, rubbed it in a little bit with him. He was pretty annoyed that I'd seen both of these birds. But yeah, it was a mega. It was just a really intense experience to get up there, and it was just wonderful to finally see this bird. Really tough one. Yeah. So that was my little memorable bird sighting from Ecuador, the chestnut-bellied Cotinga.
Yeah, no, the place that you mentioned is a tough, tough trail after you get to the top, not even hiking the 20 kilometers to the top that you did. And that's a terrible trail. I mean, that's why everybody hates it. And that's, I told you from the beginning, I hate it because only walking the trail up is a pain. It's really, really tough. Yeah, and I went there and I didn't see the bird.
I was warmed up by that point.
Yep. You'd built up so much good karma. You know, you were like a Buddhist monk doing some kind of trek. And by the time you got to the top, you couldn't have missed the bird.
No, I really earned it. Sometimes you just feel like you've earned a bird by the amount of effort that you've put into seeing it.
Yep. Yeah,
for sure. Good story. Making me wish I was in the Andes right now. I guess Andres is in the Andes, but he probably wishes he was in Madagascar.
At least seeing a couple of those Madagascar birds for sure.
Yeah, you need to make it here sometime. Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll wrap up the episode with Andres' third awesome Ecuadorian lifetime bird experience, which is another epic bird that I have not seen, a banded ground cuckoo.
All right. The name itself of the bird sounds very special, eh? Banded ground cuckoo. And that's another of the mega, mega, mega rarities. This is a bit of a shorter story, really. And it's just satisfaction after thinking that it is going to be lost. So this bird is so rare and so difficult that even people like Bob Ridgely, that has been birding South America for decades, have not seen it at the time.
You haven't seen it, eh?
Yeah, exactly. And so rare and so difficult that also there was a lot of long-distance twitching from people that heard about this particular bird being seen in this spot called Un Poco del Chocó in Ecuador. And that just immediately took a flight and flew down because they knew that that was the chance. So imagine, I mean, $1,000 ticket to get to one bird is a lot of dollars per bird, eh? So that tells you how special this bird is. And it is not only rare, but it is a beautiful bird, all wavy pattern on the chest and a racing crest, black long tail. Is like roadrunners.
Yeah, it's
probably like a greater roadrunner, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit chunkier, for sure, with a thick, strong bill. I mean, a nemesis for most people. The bird is just like a frustration that turned into a cool thing. The first time that I did with tropical birding, international birding, was going to Brazil. I was going to join Nick into this tour so that I could learn Southeast Brazil. And in order to do that, I needed to spend about a month away in Brazil. It was about 3 weeks or more. But the thing is that I decided to go also with my wife in a pre-learning tour just so that we can spend some time in Brazil because I was going to be away for so long. So I said, well, let's just go and spend some time in Rio and in other places. And so we decided to go with my wife and did all the touristy things and visited the beautiful Rio de Janeiro and all that. But the very first night when we arrived into Rio de Janeiro, I was going to be there in Brazil again for like a month or so. The very first night that I got there, I signed into the hotel's Wi-Fi and the typical thing. You just go through some news and through some Facebook. And I see this post from Ian Campbell, one of the owners of Tropical Birding. An absolutely gorgeous, but gorgeous picture of banded ground cuckoo. and I put a weird face that my wife noticed it. And I read the description and he said,
¿Qué pasa, mi amor?
Thanks to a hot tip from a fellow birder, we managed to lock onto this rare banded ground cuckoo. And it was so tame that we managed to see that and it's going to be here for probably another week. And I did something like I should have sworn or something like that. I was like, God damn it. And something like in peace. And my wife was really scared, like, what's going on, what happened, my
you okay
baby? I'm like, ah, this okay? bird. And so she's
okay,
like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm not okay. It's just a bird. No, it's not just a bird, it's the
not
bird,
just a bird.
And so it was like, oh damn it. And subsequently I was very happy. It was the first time I went to Brazil, so I was getting a ton of lifers and everything. But the post about the banded ground cuckoo keep haunting me because everybody was going on Twitches. So everybody that I knew put in his Facebook feed, I just saw the ground cuckoo. And every time better pictures. And I'm like, this is kind of weird timing for me to be for the first time away of my home country. And it was frustrating in that way because, as I told you, the news feed kept on feeding the banded ground cuckoo. And I'm like, oh, is it going to be still there when I go back? And you just don't know with these birds. But happily, Ecuador is the home of the great Angel Paz. And Angel Paz taught us a lot about birding. And he is the one that started feeding the antpitas, including some very, very rare and difficult ones like the giant antpita and things like that. Make a big change in birding for Ecuador. Is a big, big guy. Mm-hmm. And so following his instincts and following his thoughts, this lady that owns the Poco del Chocó, Nicole, she said, well, I'm going to try to do an Angel Pass here and try to get this bird around. And so he starts going by night, every night, with a flashlight that it is not even, that doesn't have even batteries. She has to use a, how you say that, to power the flashlight.
A little dynamo.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of wind it up, yeah.
And trying to go collect insects, because this bird eats insects. So he goes there every night trying in these grasslands, trying to collect crickets and that to feed the bird. And happily managed to get the ground cuckoo to stay around her for like a month and a half or 2 months and something like that. So that was an incredible story. So happily, when I came back after a month being in Brazil, the very next day I said, baby, let's go. We have to go for this bird before it disappears, because it was still uncertain if the bird was going to still be there or not, because, you know, they follow ants. And we went there, and by the time the bird was already quite used to people, so much that the lady, Nicole, there, the owner, gave my wife a cricket and said, look, just hold it here and the bird is going to come and eat from your hand. Wow, and I am seeing this, right? And I thought, well, this is going to be great. And I saw the bird, and of course, a beautiful thing. But for some reason in my head, in my twisted head, it was not a fulfilling story, because seeing the bird feeding from the hand, it didn't feel like that correct. And I don't know, but it was superb. It's still a great, great thing. So I was very happy.
Those mythical birds, you kind of want to glimpse it in an ant swarm, like deep in the jungle, rather than feeding from your wife's hand.
Exactly. I mean, you expect it to be this dream sighting, that you were just walking there and you heard this very, very soft sound, and you went there and there was the bird. No, it didn't happen. It was in the open area there. My wife handled the bird, a cricket, in the mouth. So it was a funny thing. Finally, we got it. It was great. But I just didn't feel that super excited. It was more relief, I think, than a pleasure, until a year ago, when I was with a tour group and doing the intro tour here in the Andes. And that was exactly the way. We were just walking there, and I managed to bring all the group. It was like seven people with me. Coincidentally, there was a 8-year-old guy, a very nice young birder that won a prize that Tropical Birding gave away. And he was there, a 7-year-old or something, or 8-year-old. Probably a bit older, wow. I cannot remember. And we were all just walking there, this track, and I said, no, hold on, guys. I have a feeling, let's better take this track here. And it was an open track. As we turn around, we are looking everybody at the same time in that particular spot, and this banded ground cuckoo crosses the road in front of us.
Wow.
No, you've got to be kidding me. And the bird is there, just crosses, disappears, and goes, and everybody just frozen. Again, goosebumps and everything. That's exactly how I wanted it, to see the bird from the first time, and it happened. And the dad, I think it was, from this guy, grandfather, it's like, Andres, don't worry about the swearing. He's heard before. So, that's my banded ground cuckoo story. It was
so that funny. Felt almost more like your life, or like your first sighting, than seeing
exactly.
it eating at the Poco de Choco.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No, that
we've
that
talked
was,
about this a bit, redeemed. Charlie and I.
Yeah, it appeared it was one of my top 10 lifetime birds when we did that that series of episodes quite a ways back. That was some of our first podcasts. But yeah, I mean, this was one of my top birds, and luckily I got it in an ant swarm at a reserve called Canandé, which I think was before it appeared at Poco de Choco. I got like a real one then, and it was amazing. Yeah, it was everything I dreamed of.
Yeah, no, it's a superb bird. Oof. Now, very happy with
definitely
the last one.
The most beautiful ground cuckoo, and they're all pretty spectacular birds, but the banded is just incredible. Yeah. Kind of black and white, heavily barred.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just thinking about that whole, that phenomenon of that cuckoo showing up at Pocorichoco, and I'm thinking, was that the biggest global Twitch ever? Because I think thousands of people might have gone and seen that bird.
Could easily be, yeah. I actually coincidentally was in a lodge in Brazil at the time, and Bob Ridgely was there. And I said,
Had he seen it yet by this point or not?
No. I said, have you heard of this bird
really
being shown in Ecuador? Yeah. He's like, no, I really want to go. I actually have already my ticket. Because he was doing a project there in Regua, this beautiful place near Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah.
He was writing this book about the southeast of Brazil. And he's like, I have my flight back to the States in a couple of weeks' time, and then immediately have my ticket to Ecuador. And so he went back after his project and flew directly to Ecuador to get that bird. Yeah, I remember that.
I think it was probably his most wanted bird, wasn't it?
It has to be, I guess so. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a bunch of coincidences regarding that bird particularly there, yeah. No, it was a great thing.
I'm trying to think if there's any other thing that would rival that in terms of being a global Twitch. There could have been some things in Europe. And I'm also thinking Asia's funny these days because there's this huge community of Asian photographers. And if suddenly some rare pitta starts coming into some feeding station, there can be large numbers of people traveling to see that. It's a different community.
The one that I know in South America that will make at least a friend Nick Athanas just take a plane and fly is if it shows up again, if it reappears, the Kinglet Calyptura. I know something that will make a big Twitch out of a lot of people, yeah.
It was thought to be extinct and they found it around 2003, 2004.
Yeah.
And I think I was there. I went looking for it in probably a couple of years later. It might have been 2006, 2007. And it hadn't been seen since, and I went to the same places to look for it and didn't see anything. And there was a few people that said they'd seen it, and, you know, it was... But, yeah, it's a tiny, tiny little Caatinga that it just seems to have disappeared.
Yeah.
I think people think that it might have been an altitudinal migrant and the lower habitat in the... Because in the mountains there's still quite good habitat where it was found, but
exactly.
I think they think that maybe lower down that it was all cleared, so there was no habitat for it.
Exactly. That's one of the dreams of this place that I told you, Regua, in Brazil. They are great at protecting and reforesting a lot of forests. And one of their hopes, particularly, is to create enough territory in the lowlands of Brazil, enough good forests, so that if the Kinglet Calyptura is still around first and needs this altitudinal migration, that it can come down to their land and just give enough, like a corridor of land, to work on that. Yes. So yeah, no, for sure.
It's not beyond the realm of possibilities that it could show up. I mean, there's not a huge number of people going out there birding. It's not, you know, like the States or the UK or whatever. You know, you've got, you know, relatively few birders and a relatively large area. So
there's a large community of Brazilian ornithologists and birders and photographers more than anything. So there is quite a bit.
But people tend to go to the same places. And I don't know. When I was there, I saw nobody. I didn't see a birder for.
You don't run into a lot of groups, but there is a community that is quite healthy, let's say.
Well, thanks to everybody for listening. Thanks so much, Andres, for coming on to the podcast 2 weeks in a row. It's been great to have you. People should make sure to check out the School of Birding, where there's tutorials from all three of us. Definitely check out Andres's A Wildlife Guide to Ecuador. Even if you're just interested in the region, check it out. And if you're going to Ecuador, you will not want to be without that guide. And hopefully some of you folks will have the pleasure of being guided by Andres in his home turf of Ecuador. Amazing, amazing, incredibly biodiverse country. For this week's Natural Sound, we're going to play the Nocturnal Curacao, which was Andres' first bird. Awesome sound of nighttime in the Amazon rainforest.
Imagine Andres and Harold crashing through the undergrowth of the jungle there.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. It was a lot of fun.
It's a pleasure.
Please do help Charlie and Ken be patrons here. They are super people, and I hope that this podcast it goes on for a long time. I'm a big fan. It's always very, very enjoyable. So it was a big pleasure to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Catch you next week. Mm-hmm.